Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Business of Show Business with me, Jamie Boddy. And today I'm joined by an actor who is also a business owner, and that is the lovely Ellie DeRohan. Ellie is a prime example of why quite often the most interesting people don't just do the one thing. So Ellie trained at RADA. She's performed in the West End. She's performed in New York. But alongside building up a career on stage and on screen, she launched Mona with her co-founder. So Mona is a platform designed specifically for actors. It helps connect them to flexible, well-paid work to kind of supplement their performance career or potentially for them to scratch that itch and use their other skills. So in this episode, we are talking about how to launch a business, auditioning, actors' life, and all things the business of show business. Ellie, welcome. Happy podcast day.
Happy podcast day to you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. It's the best day in the diary, really.
I should say.
So quickly, we met at Actors Pro Expo. So we should give a shout out to that lovely expo. And you staffed that, actually, I've just found out, with Mona.
Yes, we did. Felicity got in contact through LinkedIn, who runs Actors Pro Expo. And so we staffed the event and then got a stall. It was our first year and it was really great and lovely to meet you, of course.
Yes, of course. So there's so much. Like, your career is amazing. So you trained at RADA. You've done TV shows with Netflix, other things like that. But that's not a straight line going from RADA to New York to Netflix. What was life like if we rewind to you graduating RADA in 2017?
Yes.
And then what your life looked like? Tell us.
Well, 2017, it feels like it's nearly 10 years, which is a bit mad. I think I'd gone straight from school. So I turned 19, I think, on the first week of RADA.
Gosh, and you were like, I want to whip around for my birthday.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, everyone to the pub. I think when I first left, I was just so young. So I was quite bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and had no idea what to expect from both adult life and the industry. Yeah. So I think now, 10 years on nearly, I feel a lot more confident in both the industry and in myself.
Yeah. So your career has seen you in Death on the Nile, Anatomy of a Scandal, and then you did Kenneth Branagh's King Lear in the West End and in New York.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? Because again, to do a show in the West End, dream. And then for it to just casually transfer to New York, were you like, am I being punked? Like, what is this?
It did feel quite like that. I mean, I have not had a straight line career in any way. It's definitely been one of the biggest highlights. Until this moment, of course, until being on this podcast. And now I can retire, really.
Yeah.
I have been very fortunate. Kenneth Branagh was president of RADA when I was training there. And he, throughout his presidency, everyone in their third year got to audition for him and the casting director, Lucy Bevan, in their final year. And we did a Shakespeare monologue. And I was lucky enough to be cast in a sort of weird in-house production of Hamlet with Tom Hiddleston that he directed straight out of drama school.
Oh my gosh.
So then, of course, after that, I was like, acting is so easy. Why do people say it's hard? Just like be in a really big production.
Yeah.
And then I didn't work for 9 months. So I have a pre-standing relationship with Kenneth, which has proven very fortunate with lots of his film productions and his mentorship. But Lear was definitely the biggest thing we did together. We always sort of knew that New York could be on the cards. And then Ken, on our final warm-up, played Frank Sinatra, New York, New York, and was like, we're all going. And so it was a big celebration. But weird to return to a show after, I think it was an 8-month gap, 9-month gap.
Gosh.
Between,
I can imagine he was like Oprah and he's like, you get a car, you go to New York.
Yeah, it was. It did feel like that. It was quite amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, New York's an incredible city.
Yeah.
And getting to work at the Shed Theatre, which is like a new, very modern venue, was very different from working at the Wyndhams here in the West End, but both equally as wonderful.
What was very interesting about that journey is that you were that unicorn. And what I say about drama school, you leave straight into a show. You are the shining unicorn. But then literally on the flip side of that, you then felt the, oh, I've not got a job. I'm unemployed. And because maybe New York was there, that may potentially impacted your audition process as well. Because you're thinking, if that does go to New York, I want to go.
Totally.
So you kind of felt both those extremes within that, like that first year of graduating.
Yeah, it was quite mad. So, I mean, as I say, after Hamlet, I didn't work for a very long time until Ken actually kindly put me in a small role, which was my first time on set in Artemis Fowl for Disney. And then many moons later, having that gap between King Lear in the West End and King Lear in New York, it was actually a lot easier for me to do those 9 months out of work because I was used to it. I knew how to side hustle. I knew how to make ends meet. And it no longer felt like a dent in my ego as it had done when I first left drama school, not being in work. It just felt like, yeah, this is what us actors do and how we have to get on with things.
So let's talk about your experience on set and on stage. Very different experiences. Do you have a preference?
I think artistically, theatre will always have my heart, particularly being quite a Shakespeare girly. But I will say I've learnt to enjoy film and telly a lot more. Yeah. And when I haven't done it for a while, I do really miss the collaboration of being on set and actually in a gorgeous way, feeling like a much smaller cog. Yeah. I know that my job on those sets is just the acting and it's someone else's job to make me look good, sound good and all those kinds of things. And it's much more of a sort of a medium for the editor and the director, whereas I can give just my character. Yeah. Whereas I feel like on stage, in a lovely way, it's a whole story that I'm telling and that I'm a part of.
Yeah. I love where on stage, like the momentum, you've got to get through that 2 hours. Where then on set, like they can just shout cut at any point. And
completely.
You're like, oh, it's a whole different tool belt, isn't it, to use as an actor?
Massively. I remember one day on set, I was in a film called All Is True and I was giving birth and I had to die in this birth scene.
Oh my gosh.
And it was meant to be this very dramatic, blood everywhere and screams, and having to stop start that was quite something, and sort of maintain that headspace. But it's a different kind of art form, you know. You've got to be able to switch into gear when they say action. Whereas I feel like in theatre, you sometimes get the luxury of the narrative to take you there.
Yeah.
Imaginatively.
You mentioned there about side hustling and making ends meet, which we will talk about momentarily. But what was the mental weight of you being in a show, great, and then you're not? How did you first come to terms with that when you first experienced it? Because I think that's maybe we glamorize the industry as we need to be incentivized, but the highs are sometimes equally matched by the lows. So what was that like for you mentally approaching maybe that in between time or that not knowing period?
I do think my career, because it has had such highs and such lows, you know, I've worked with some incredible people. I will never forget. One day I was on set with Judi Dench doing a scene.
Dame Judi.
Felt very honoured. I actually got one of the biggest starstruck moments I've had. Forgot all my lines. But the next day I was nannying and running around after children, cleaning up after them, and the dichotomy of that and mental shift, I think, allows me to have hopefully a longer career, because I think it's all part and parcel of trying to be in this industry. And London's expensive if you want to live here. I remember I've barely been recognised, but a couple of times that I was working behind a bar at the Royal Albert Hall. And it was just after, I can't remember, something had been released and someone went, "Oh my gosh, are you Eleanor de Rohan?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "Paying rent." Like, you know, that's just, it's part of the, ego-wise, it hurt at the beginning.
Yeah.
But now, in all honesty, I don't know many actors that don't have to do it. So I think the more we talk about it and the more we share the knowledge and how to survive, the easier it will be on everyone.
Because the goal is to create work, is to perform. And I think sometimes we don't realise that. We just want that shiny end thing, don't we, of the credit. But actually, it's a career at the end of the day. Yeah. And I think now you could have a more stable job that's not in the creative sector. And there's redundancies all the time. So it's almost like no job is fully, like, safe anymore.
Completely. The world is really changing from when we first left. And this idea of having a stable job or a non-stable job is slightly redundant.
Yeah.
We all are just trying to survive. And I think the benefits of keeping yourself artistically and emotionally content, you know, have to go hand in hand. And if that means struggling and living off savings and you know, beans on toast every night, or if it means working countless hours a day to make yourself feel fulfilled, both are valid. It's whichever one you pick.
So the in-between times, every creative has them, whether they're on stage, backstage. For some people, the in-between times will be shorter, some will be bigger. So let's talk about Mona then. When I met you at Actors Pro Expo, again, shout out to Felicity. it was great to hear. I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a needed resource.
Yeah.
Helping actors find the flexible work that's also well paid and sustains the creative side. Where did that little brainchild from Mona come about? I know you've got some co-founders as well. So where did the idea, or when did the idea sprout, I should say?
So my two wonderful co-founders, Billy and Charlie, it was really Billy's brainchild. He is not a creative. He had a background in recruitment, but the three of us go way, way back. I've known them most of my life. And he had, with the background of Brexit and COVID, the hospitality industry was really suffering. And as was, you know, the creative industries, nearly all my actors were out of work, actor friends. And he had loads of contacts within the hospitality world looking for good workers. And I said, well, I know nearly all my actor friends have countless years in hospitality. You know, let's set this up. And it sort of just grew from there. And I think the growth we've had over the last 2.5 years is nearly 3 years actually, is down to the caliber of the workforce. Actors are the best. And if you treat them well and give them that flexibility, they reward you with hard work.
The soft skills that performers have, I just think that tool belt.
Oh my gosh.
It keeps going.
We can pick anything up. We can charm anyone. Exactly. And in the world of customer facing roles like hospitality or promo or whatever it is, our skill set is second to none. And that's half the reason I wanted to set it up, is because I had done every single side hustle. I've worked for all the agencies. I've nannied, I've tutored, I've worked at a pub, I've worked in a bar, I've everything. And yet I was being paid the same amount as someone who was sat on their phone saving money for Thailand. He was 18 and I was 24. I'd worked in the industry for 5 years, and yet we were both on minimum wage, and it just didn't seem fair. We deserve to be rewarded for the skill set we have.
I think that's the thing, because I think performers or creatives, again, because there's some amazing people that are on the other side, whether they're writers, producers, directors, coming up as well. They give so much, we have so much pride in our work. And also, let's think about it, we're quite like, we like to be liked. So we want to do the best we can. And then when, so if you want a job and someone doesn't, or you don't get that type of applause, and what I mean, like, you don't get that positive feedback, you're like, I'll try harder. So that's why they thrive, I think, in those adjacent jobs, the side hustles, side careers. So what type of careers come through Mona then? Let's talk about the platform. Because again, it's not just, you don't just plug that gap anymore of actor job. But what type of jobs are on there? Or what jobs do you think resonate really well with creatives?
So as with everything, it's horses for courses. But we, hospitality is our bread and butter, because most actors have a background with it and we're all really good at it. It's about charm and skill and all that kind of stuff. But since then, we have grown into the worlds of promo, brand activation, TikTok live hosting, content creation, tour guiding, anything in front of people, actors are generally brilliant at. So I'm really excited to see where else we can expand into.
So for you now, launching this business 2.5, 3 years in, what is the sell like of a performer to one of those jobs? Because again, that can, because I think actors, performers, they are in a way, it's like, oh, glamorous press that shows. But on the other side, it's like they could be considered flaky, too animated, whatever it is. So what is the sell like of going to these companies?
It's weirdly, I think because I am it, that sounds really silly. I am, I know Mona's a good idea, because if I didn't run it, I would join it. And when I'm going in and pitching to clients with Billy and Charlie, it's slightly easy to sell actors because we're brilliant at what they do. We just need flexibility. And that's where Mona helps. You know, I think I have so many applicants of actors who say, yeah, I'm trying for a job at a pub, but they don't want to hire an actor. So I'm having to lie if I've got an audition or pretend I've got a doctor's appointment. Or, and that just shouldn't be the case. We should be allowed the flexibility to pursue both and to be able to pay our rent whilst, you know, having time to audition. So Mona can help, you know, if you get a last minute audition, we'll fill that shift for you. We'll be that middleman to help smooth the client and help you. And, you know, I always say to our, the clients that we're pitching to, we guarantee professionalism, presentable and personable. That's where actors shine. We like to show up for people and we like stepping in as an understudy last minute and picking things up, or, you know, serving a room full of very high-end individuals with a canapé tray and feeling that role. And if you feel like there's a company behind you supporting you that you know has your back, you'll perform better. You won't just be sat in the corner grumpy pulling pints. you'll want to do a good job.
I wish I had known at college what exactly freelance meant. Mm. It doesn't necessarily mean 100% of your income and work is freelance. It could be you are that lucky person. It could be that you are part-time somewhere else, part-time freelance. It could be that you freelance around full-time job, around care commitments, whatever it is. So it sounds like Mona is that kind of sweet spot there where you almost cater it to each performer individually.
Exactly.
How so, do you... So you've got over 1,000 actors on your books.
Yeah.
How do you vet them or how do you find the right jigsaw pieces?
That's a great question. It's me, really, and it's an instinctual thing. But I have... So they apply via the website. And luckily, we've never really had to put any advertisement into... sourcing actors because, shock horror, there's a lot of us out of work.
What?
I know. And word of mouth spreads. If you treat people well, they'll tell their friends. So after they've applied, I will sit down on a Google video with them for about half an hour. You know, not just chatting about their CV, hospitality or whatever wise, but talking about where they went to drama school, what drives them, what they are hoping to do in the future. I'm really getting an instinct for who they are as a person, I hope. And then it means that when it comes to putting people on jobs, everyone at Mona gets to pick which shifts they apply to. So you get to decide if you're free that day or can go to that postcode or whatever it is. And then we look through the applicants and I go, oh my gosh, yeah. I remember Jamie, he's worked at private members clubs before as a cocktail waiter. He'd be so brilliant on this event because I know that it's a similar environment or whatever it is. Or even if it's just an instinctual thing, I go, they were so charming and they turned up on time to my video. They had set it up all up nicely. They were interacting with me really well. I go, well, that's clearly how you'll turn up for the client. So brilliant. You get, you know, 10 out of 10.
I was lecturing at university yesterday. And one of the things we did was when we talk about creative careers and other sectors, whether creative marketing, journalism and so on, I looked at their CVs of their non-performance jobs and I helped them unpack, like, if you've worked at a bar, if you've worked at a supermarket, if you've worked at a library, there are so many skills in that that actually you can pick out and put them in other jobs. But I think as performers, we equate our worth to time on stage.
Totally.
And that's not the case. And there's a charity called Dancers Career Development who help fund dancers train. And I've met some amazing people from that who are dancers that have gone on to be like anything from like media owners to tree surgeons to sommeliers. Yeah. And this is, their skills are so transferable. So I think if that's the only thing you get from this podcast, transferable skills, everyone, you've got them.
Yes, it's so true. I've got friends who... I hate to say retraining. They're not retraining. Yeah. They're just adding more strings to their bow. Yeah. You know, a dear friend of mine we met on a side hustle job doing kids' parties and we're really good mates. And he is now doing a plumbing course because he can facilitate that around the acting. I've got friends that have learned how to sign because they know that they can be an interpreter we have so many skill sets. If it's to do with whatever your instinct is as an actor, there's probably a side hustle that can utilize those instincts well.
So let's talk about, you're running the business now. Mm. First of all, what were the hurdles? And then second of all, what business skills now do you implement or use as an actor, or would say all actors, you need to start viewing yourself as a business?
So hurdles wise, there have been a few, but I will say, I think going into business with people you love and trust is everything. Billy, Charlie and I, are always honest. I think working in a three is always great because there's always a tie break. I think having a clear vision is where you can overcome hurdles. And we've had, you know, a couple over the last few years, but communication and a shared goal is how you overcome them. And in terms of what I've put in practice in my own life, I mean, I never ever thought I'd be sat at a laptop ever in my life. I'm quite shifty and it's amazing that I've sat still for this long, to be honest.
I've chained her to the desk. Exactly. She can't leave.
But I think having that focus and having a to-do list, I have three notes apps on my phone currently. And one will be my Mona to-do, one will be my acting to-do, and one will be my life to-do. And, you know, life to-do might be put the washing out. Acting to do might be a self-tape that I need to remember to do or write some letters to people that I'm trying to get in contact with. And then my Mona to-do list. And I think having the business keeps me on target in terms of working hours and things like that. And then also the bit that I think a lot of us actors are quite bad at, the financial side, putting money away for tax and understanding what your cash flow is going to be like. You know, it's so tough that often we aren't paid for a really long time, or you might do a commercial, which is great, you're getting X thousands, but you might not be paid for another 6 months. And so working out how to fill that time until you will get paid, and understanding when you'll get paid and how much you should be setting aside for tax, is so important. And I'm not always great at it. You know, I remember a lovely accountant come to chat to us at RADA and being like, 25% of every paycheck goes into things. I've never done that, which is probably really bad, but I've never done that. What I have done is whenever I'd done a big lump or done a film or a TV show, if I get a big lump, whatever is above what I'm normally earning per month, I put away.
That's great.
And just go hide it from myself. Otherwise I will spend it. Yeah. So I think having the separate bank account that you know is for your tax, that is only for dire straits or emergencies, is really helpful practice.
I have visions of you now just stuffing money in pillowcases in the freezer
All around the house.
hide it,
don't let me look.
So how do you balance Mona and actor? And that's probably therefore also the blueprint of what actors are facing as well, yeah, with their other side careers, side jobs. So how do you balance that?
Having two fabulous co-founders that are very understanding. I mean, we launched Mona in the July of 2023, and I started King Lear rehearsals in the September, and was then slightly out for the count, running around putting posters up wherever I could, but not much help hands-on. But Billy and Charlie have always known that acting is my first love, and so are always very accommodating to that. Yeah. So having people that are sympathetic, like having Mona be your middleman for you in the jobs, you know, it can feel like spinning plates. But I think planning ahead is always key. So even if I get a recall for something, I'll just flag it to the boys and be like, hey, there is a small possibility. I am out for 2 weeks next month. I'll still have my phone or whatever it is. And ultimately, if I'm filming, I can probably still do Mona around it. Yeah. There's a lot of time sat in a trailer.
Instead of playing Uno.
Exactly. Oh my God, scrolling. And like, I used to read quite a lot on set, but like scrolling or reading, I now just take my laptop and I'm able to do a lot of Mona from it. But yeah, when I'm in a show, particularly in rehearsals, as actors know, there's just no time. So I think having sympathetic co-founders and an ability to wear multiple hats, as we all can, because we all play roles.
Saying there about Mona being the middle person, do you think with creatives there's like a slight disconnect or understanding of relationships? And what I mean by that is sometimes we think an agent or producer or director's got the power, and we're almost, we slot in.
Totally.
So again, trying to claim our own power. But like with those survival jobs, parallel careers, however you like to phrase it, it's maybe you want to try and find someone that supports you and is understanding, as opposed to thinking, oh, this is just... Is that maybe a fair thing to say?
Absolutely. I'd worked for loads of agencies where I just sort of felt like I was a body holding a tray, or there was no celebration for the skill set. So if I got an audition, I was like, well, I don't really care about them. They don't really care about me. Yeah. So it doesn't really matter. Whereas I hope with Mona, the joy is that you're turning up to a shift where you know the rest of them are actors. So you know that there's common ground with everyone. Yeah. You know that there's a company that's built by actors that understands what you're going through, and, you know, pays properly and is understanding about flexibility, and that there is agency within ourselves to make things happen. Yeah. And I think I have wonderful agents who I've been with for a few years, who I really trust and trust their taste, which is, I think, very important. And when there's quiet times, like I've been having this year, I've had a very dry 2026, and just in terms of whatever the state of the world and all those kinds of things, going in to see my agent relatively regularly, you know, once every couple of months, just to check in, and they're seeing how we are. And I said slightly tentatively, is it worth me writing to people, or, you know, not wanting to step on their toes, or being worried that they'd be like, no, that's our job. And my agent was like, what a good idea. Here's personal touch goes a long way. Here's who you've been auditioning for recently. Mm-hmm. Here's who's given you good feedback. They might probably be people to touch base with. Right. And I think feeling like you're all singing from the same hymn sheet is really important. And so finding a team or agent or an agency that you trust and that feels has your back is everything.
And I... again, people who listen to this podcast will know that I always bang on about with brands, people buy into brands they know, like, and trust. And that's exactly what you've said there. Touching on that relationship with agents, we get a lot of newer or like fresh grads or newer people into the sector who listen, who like, it's like, oh, how do I get an agent? Like, what do I do? You spoke very positively there about your relationship.
Yeah.
Can you maybe talk about what you enjoy about a positive relationship with an agent? So maybe someone listening thinks, that's what I need to get. Not necessarily I need that agent, but I need that rapport or that feeling.
Totally. And I remember I thought being at RADA, and to some extent it is obviously true, RADA itself is a brand and it pulls in a clout of certain, what, you know, whatevers. But I really struggled in my third year. I didn't get signed until my showcase at the very end of the year, and everyone else was going for meetings and go for this, and I had nothing.
Yeah.
But then in the space of a week, I signed with an agent and Ken Branagh cast me in Hamlet. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So it shows how quickly it can turn. That's that. But then I was with an agent for a few years and it just wasn't right. And I could feel it wasn't right, but I was so scared of upsetting them, upsetting anything, you know. But I think the world is different now. And I don't think it is always necessary to have an agent. I think finding someone, as I said, whose taste you trust. So my agent will call me, which number one, I love. If it's something good, they will call to say, hey, there's this, you're going to take for it, rather than an email. They'll follow That's up really with an email. Nice. But a call goes a long way for me. And they'll say, oh, script's a bit dodgy, but the director's really good. Or your part's really small, but it's getting you in front of this casting director who I know is casting this in a bit. So it feels like, again, it's not just willy-nilly that they're sending me out and stuff. It feels targeted. So that's really important for me. And I'm very lucky that my agent works as like a co-op. Oh. So there's not one particular agent I talk to. I talk to the whole team where I know if Tom calls me, it's probably telly. If Lou calls me, it's probably film. If Megan calls me, it's theatre. Like, they're working as a group.
Yeah.
And so if someone goes on holiday or on mat leave, it doesn't matter because there's other people that I feel have my back. That doesn't work for everyone. I know a lot of my friends like having that one-on-one personal relationship with their agent. So I think doing your research and, you know, the big agents are fantastic and get you in a lot of doors. But I have a dear friend who was with a big agent and went to a much smaller agency, and she hasn't stopped working because they are so hungry for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's understanding what that relationship is, and there's a business element to it. Mm. So you work collaboratively to get your, you, hopefully they get you work, you get the money.
Absolutely.
But it's this, hearing what a positive relationship can sound like, I think would be really interesting to people, to be like, oh, okay. And again, it will work for some people, won't for others, but it's this understanding like, okay, this is what.
And I think a positive relationship means, for example, as I say, I haven't worked in since January, acting wise, and yet I still think highly of my agent.
Yeah.
Because I think it's easy for actors to think, oh, it's because my agent isn't working hard enough, or it's because X, Y, and Z, when a lot of things are out of everyone's control. And so just keeping that relationship positive and checking in on them and them checking in on you and asking what you can do. You know, do you need new headshots? Would they like you? I was doing a singing lesson the other day, so I taped myself doing a song and sent it to them. Was like, oh, if anyone's ever looking for a singing sample, and they're like, fantastic, sounds amazing. What a good thing to do. Thank you. You know, you have more agency than you think to keep yourself artistically fulfilled.
And what I think that's a prime example of then is in those in-between times, although, so at the time of recording, the beginning of May, you're not married, but you're almost married. So when this comes out, you'll be married.
I will,
so the downtime's probably giving you some time to focus on the wedding. Love
it's
that.
It's true.
But what's probably been good about Mona then, and this parallel career, side career, again, however you phrase it, it's filled in those gaps financially and also kept you fulfilled.
Totally.
And that's what a hopefully good side career will do. talking about that, the industry has changed so much in the increase of social media, AI, vertical dramas, the landscape for actors has changed, but that's also meant your business model has changed because you've now just launched Lisa, which is kind of a bit more of a digital offering and so on. But tell us a bit about that.
So Lisa, apologies for the terrible pun, Mona, Lisa.
No, but you know what? It's good. People are going to remember that.
With branding. Is sort of UCG content creation side of the business. Now, it's not for everyone. Not all actors like that kind of work or want to do that kind of work. But with the growing world and, you know, vertical dramas, as you say, and things like that, having an online presence is important for some work. Not for all work, but for some. And I'm finding a lot of our applicants, actor-wise now, are really interested in, like, the TikTok live hosting because their skill set's obviously being utilised as a host and a presenter. Now, there's obviously, it has to be looked at the legislation of when are you advertising a brand, when are you a presenter, or when are you in an advert? And it's an interesting line, and it's not for all actors, you know. For me, my commercials agent, it's just not worth that conversation. However, particularly if you're unrepresented, what a brilliant way to make extra money. Like, it pays really well. And the content stuff you can do from home. I'm terrible at social media, so it wouldn't be for me. But much, particularly newer grads, are really good at it. And so why not utilize that skill set to make some extra money?
And I think what I love there is you said about the legislation. God, I can't put my teeth in. It is. And I think because, again, as a presenter now, rewind 5 years ago, you wouldn't work on a brand on that, that therefore might be exclusive. You can't work on another brand. It's changed so much.
So
I think what's great is there's so many opportunities, but even for acting and knowing if it's a digital buyout, not a digital buyout, knowing maybe where you sit and if you have got representation, how they can maybe help or if it does muddy the water.
Exactly. You know, it's an ever-evolving thing. And I think it is up to every actor to make that decision for themselves, whether they say yes or no to a job, both acting wise or presenting wise or content wise or online wise, vertical drama wise. It's up for the individual to make that career choice. And as I always say to everyone with all our actors, Mona members, the choice is yours. We have this sort of plate of offerings, and you get to pick what suits you best, both time-wise, product-wise, location-wise. The power's with you.
Let's quickly debuff the stigma of the in-between and that work. And then also maybe dispel the myth of, like, you have to star for your art. They kind of go hand in hand, don't they? And it's like, I always say this, it's so toxic of the industry because you have to be working but also available. And you can't do everything. So what about that myth? Should we scrap that now?
I hate it. I think it's such nonsense. I have worked many jobs that I was assured that were my big break and that, you know, say goodbye to the life of waitressing. You're going to be on stage forever. No, 3 weeks later, there I am, you know, serving burgers or whatever it is. Like, it's just not true. And so I think the quicker we de-stigmatize the side hustle jobs, the easier it is for everyone to just survive. Also, sounds really silly. I think there's something quite romantic and sort of old-fashioned about the actor that's pulling the pints and making ends meet. And ultimately, you have to be out in the world to make connections and for creativity. And we've had people that have met on Mona shifts that have then gone on to make a show together and take it to the Fringe.
Amazing.
Or, you know, there's always opportunity. There's something in everything you do.
And every job does come out of a conversation. So whether that's the traditional route of an agent to producer, agent to you. But as you said, being in those spaces with other creatives, having that life experience. Also, I've been at events when I've been hired as a host for that one brand, but then I'll get chatting to someone like, and they're like, oh, we need someone for this. And then like, people only see what you show them. So I get the fact you're meeting more people will hopefully create more positive opportunities.
Exactly.
Before we quickly wrap up with our quick fire questions, for any graduates that are listening, what advice would you give to them upon graduating?
Join Mona. I think join Mona for two reasons. I like to separate, but not just this, not just Mona. Take care of your muggle self and your magic self. Your muggle self being paying the rent and finding a way to do that regardless of acting going well or not. And then take care of your magic self, your creative self. Read, go to theatre, go to workshops. I think that we have a weird stigmatism in this country around training after you've trained. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the States, it's so common to keep going to classes and to keep building those skill sets. That it's a muscle. And if you don't train it, it will get weaker. So, which is why Mona also has the community element where we run workshops, Q&As, networking nights. We're about to partner up with a major theatre and have one day a month where we do all our stuff in-house with them. Amazing. And have all our workshops and then a bit of a social in the evening so that you just chat to more people and meet other creatives. Take care of your muggle self, financially save for tax, and your magic self. Keep training and keep curious.
That's so different about the lens of American performers, because I was very lucky early on in my career to do a tour of America in a show, and I worked at like Disney and all that as well. And a lot of the Americans, when they booked a job, they'd be like, great, I can now afford to take class here. Totally. I can get new headshots. Well, I think typically in the UK, we pay for singing lesson to get the job and then we don't do anything more. And it's actually you have to keep being relevant, keep being present, keep training and pushing yourself, or you get left behind.
I nearly, because we do so many workshops each month, there was a Shakespeare workshop that we ran with a wonderful director last month, and I was really nervous and I was like, oh, I'm not going to go, it's not for me, it's for the members, I won't go. And then I thought, Ellie, who do you think you are? Get over yourself. You miss acting, get in that room and make yourself vulnerable. We're all creators, we're all performers, we're all here to learn. And I'm so glad I did, because as soon as you release the idea of the fear of entering a new space, that's where the magic happens. Like, that's where the growth is and your connection to the art increases. And as you say, you never know who you'll meet.
Yeah. And it's like, what you want is just on the other side of your comfort zone. Yeah. Otherwise you'd already have it. So we're going to end with our quick fire questions, which is called Lights, Questions, Action. Ooh. So nothing too deep, just shiny top end. Mm. So my first question, what has been your favorite job to date?
This is not quick for me. I apologize. My favorite job to date. Oh, can I have two? I'm so sorry. King Lear, awesome. But then a traveling production of Much Ado About Nothing just after COVID, where it's pay what you can in pub gardens. Great fun. That.
Both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, Half Cut Theatre. Shout out.
The most your most unusual industry story. So it could be a crazy casting. It could be that a light fell out or a cat fell off the roof in the show. What is it?
I've had a few. I fell off the stage in New York, which was hilarious. And the audience, number one, gasped and then laughed. And it was during the storm scene, so it wasn't meant to be that funny. But I don't know how, no one else on the stage noticed. And so they just saw me climbing back on.
So the girl from The Ring.
Yeah, literally like clambering back on. And like, it was set in Neolithic Britain in my like fur. And my dear friend Joseph Closter, who was playing Gloucester, was like, what are you doing down there? I was like, I just fell off.
It's a choice.
And so that was very funny.
Were you like, the healthcare over here is real expensive?
Real expensive. I was like, don't die. It's a lot if you die.
What was it like actually working with Kenneth Branagh? What was it like?
He's the best. He, not only supportive-wise and mentor-wise, he is one of the most generous people to share a stage with. He's ready to receive ideas and for you to really play with him. He's a very special man and such a talent that I just learned so much. Yeah. His craft is exceptional.
What was the very first production or professional show you ever saw?
Ooh, I remember seeing a performance of Evita when I lived in Germany, in German, which I'm not sure I quite understood, but I've definitely enjoyed. And it was exciting and lights were on. And my parents were always very good at taking me to local theatre, which has shaped everything for me.
We must say, because we've not spoken about Germany, but it was local because you lived in Germany.
I lived in Germany at the time. We didn't just nip there.
You're like, you know what, your love.
Your love, German this Evita. Local production of German Evita.
All you understood was this.
Yeah, exactly. That was it.
That was it.
Wunderbar. She was on a balcony and she did this. That's all I got.
A performer comes into them, they kick the door open, they come into Mona and they're like, I'm too good for shift work. What do you say to them?
I say, well, lucky you if you don't need us. That's like, well done. Congrats. I would say there's a lot more to Mona than just the shifts. Come and join the community. Come and join, be a member. Find fellow actors that you align with.
If Mona was a TV show, what genre and who would play you and your two co-founders?
Oh my gosh, that's so good. I would say a black comedy. It would probably be a comedy because we always have quite a giggle. I would love to be played by I think Florence Pugh's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'd like to be played by Florence Pugh. That's probably quite big-headed. Or myself. Maybe I can play myself.
It's very meta.
Exactly, very meta.
Is you playing but, Florence, you know, playing a job. You.
Yeah. And Billy and Charlie, they're both such cheeky chappies. It would have to be someone quite tall for Charlie and someone very cheeky for Billy.
What's been the best advice you have ever received? Or the best advice you didn't take? Whatever you want to do, whatever lens you want to look through.
I took these two pieces of advice. One that I learned at RADA, which is an acting piece of advice, but I use in life from a man called Jeremy Stockwell, who said, breathe, receive, know where your feet are. And that has just got me through. And every time I'm, West End debut, whatever it is, I sit, I just stand, breathe, receive, be open, know where my feet are. And the other, Kenneth Branagh told me when we were rehearsing Lear, he said, the work is serious, it's not solemn. Ooh, which I really enjoyed. Yeah. It doesn't have to be this sort of magnificent thing. You could take, it is work and we treat it with respect, but you can still have a giggle and it's not, life or death. We're not curing cancer.
Do you know when you didn't know where your feet were? New York, when you were off the stage.
When I was off the stage, falling in the air. Oh my God.
What do you do in your spare time when you're not at Mona or acting?
What do I do? Oh, I'm so boring. I love seeing mates, going to the theatre and going to nice restaurants. In fact, I'm going to Omar tonight in Borough and I'm very excited to try it. I've got a little baby niece and I spend a lot of time with her because she's the best human.
What would be your dream production, TV show, theatre, film to be in? It might have been finished, but what would be your dream production or show?
There's still a lot of parts in Shakespeare I want to play. It's quite sad. I think I realised the other day that I have now aged out of Juliet, so I'll never play her.
Lies.
I know. There's been so many good ones. I would have loved to be. I don't want to say that one because it might come back and then I can.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. There's still a lot of Shakespeare. And I'd like to do comedy. I'd like to do a comedy thing now. Yeah.
And you've just been on a podcast. So do you like to leave podcast size voice notes or a text?
I think. Voice notes are great to do, terrible to receive. So it depends who I'm doing it to. If anything, I think a text is better. It's clearer and you can come back to it.
You know what I think might work is if you voice note the role of Juliet to Kenneth.
I think that's it. Just after this.
That could work.
Ken, I've had an idea. I know you're playing Prospero at the RSC at the moment, but hold on. Yeah. Let me just do a bit of Juliet for you.
Strap yourself in. Let's go. So quickly, where can they find Mona online? Where is it?
It is online. Apply via the website monacareers.co.uk or just give us a type into Google. We're on Instagram as well, Mona Careers. And
Lisa.
And Lisa. Lisa's also on there as well. Yeah. We're making a bit of a name for ourselves. So hopefully we're not too hard to find.
Yes. All I have to say is make sure that you leave a comment and subscribe wherever you watch or listen to your podcast and stay tuned for more episodes.